Welcome to the MERS Monday podcast. I am MERS publisher John Roering, joined today by Jack Spensler, Jacob Kanzler, and Mike Balot. And our special guest today, Stu Sandler from Grand River Strategies. Stu, I want to get your takeaway. We did a poll last week. We ran November 1 through 6th, kind of wanted to pit Mayor Mike Duggan up against Bill Schuette, Gretchen Whitmer up against Bill Schuette, and Jeffrey Fire up against Bill Schuette, principally because I've argued he's kind of the last big question mark in this Democratic race, whether he gets in. He says he's not. I'm going to take him at his word. If he does, that's great. If not, but I wanted to see how he stood up against what I think is probably going to be the likely Republican nominee in Bill Schuette. What was your takeaway from those numbers that you saw?
Well, just looking at that, it looked like the two big winners on the gubernatorial side were Gretchen Whitmer and Bill Schuette. I mean, both were running away with sizable leads in their primaries. And while Mike Duggan had a decent number in his general election matchup against Bill Schuette, he also just ran a multi-million dollar general election campaign, for mayor, where, you know, so he has higher name ID, but in a Democratic primary, he's actually losing to Gretchen Whitmer by 15 points. You know, Duggan's race was basically over right after the primary when he beat Young by 30 or so points. It just reflects itself again. He was able to run a couple million dollars in positive TV. But if you look at it, both Bill Schuette, who's up by 24 points in his poll, and then Gretchen Whitmer is up by 15 points against any of the Democratic nominees, looks to be in pretty good shape right now.
Mm-hmm. This has got to be good news, though, for the Schuette campaign. I mean, when you look at the fact that the only group that she leads among are young voters, she's losing every demographic group against Schuette. She has a lack of enthusiasm among African-American voters in the city of Detroit. That's got to say something good because, I mean, historically, if you think about Michigan, we're coming off 8 years of Republican governor. I mean, we generally spring board to the other party. So, I mean, this has got to be good news for Schuette.
I think it's really good news for Schuette. It's a very competitive race. You know, like I said, I think both of these candidates have pretty much are doing really well in their primaries, and it's going to take a lot to dislodge them as the front runner. But more importantly, for Schuette, I think his matchup in a general election is very, very good. And if you look in these dynamics of how do you win a midterm, you know, he's got Donald Trump with him. That's helping him with Republican turnout in a midterm. So if you look at it, I think both bases are pretty motivated, and I think Schuette has a very good chance of winning, becoming the next governor of Michigan.
As the attorney general at the time, has Schuette pretty well inoculated himself about Democratic attacks on the Flint water thing because he's actually brought actions in the case?
Yeah, I mean, look, Bill Schuette could do the only thing he could do as attorney general. Being in that office, knowing what kind of information comes in front of you, you just have to make the decisions based on, you know, sort of what is the best interest as the attorney for the people of Michigan. And I think he's trying to, in an objective way, do this in a way that just, you know, only an attorney general can do. I think he's done fine with it. I don't know all the facts involved in it because, I mean, I've kept up with the day-to-day on the legal end. But, I think he's carrying off some prosecutions, and I think he's done well with it.
All right, Stu, let's talk a little bit about a new face that you're representing in the U.S. Senate race on the Republican side, that being John James from Detroit. We did poll in that race. We found that he was leading comfortably, 24% for him, 19% for Fred Upton. Former Chief Justice Robert Young at 7%. What do you make of that? I mean, is it just his story or what?
Yeah, I think John James's message as a conservative outsider, as a military veteran, you know, Iraqi war captain who's, you know, Army Ranger qualified and West Point grad and a job creator, you know, with his family logistic business. I think when you put those things together in a Republican primary and a general election vote, I think they resonate very powerfully. I mean, the two biggest issues are about who can create jobs in this economy and how to keep America safe. And I think John encapsulates that. And I think he's done that against some well-established candidates. And, you know, one thing I think this shows, when you have a message like John James, you don't need a ton of money. This message catches on. I mean, to think he's got 24% against some pretty well-established candidates. And if you look at some of the gubernatorial candidates who are running, in the Republican primary, you know, Brian Kelly's at 14 points, Pat Kolbeck's at 5 points, good people. But again, a guy like John James, when his message is out there, it really resonates. And that's what I think this shows. It's a pretty powerful candidate.
On Friday, we had some comments from another consultant that was complaining that the fundraising numbers for James and for Young really weren't there. He was suggesting that Spencer might be a stronger candidate in the long run. How do you react to that?
Well, I think first thing is it's kind of unfair. John James officially announced he was running at the end of September. So that first quarter, it was, I think, 2 weeks in that first quarter where he was an official candidate. But if you look at it, again, when you have Sandy Pensler, I don't know a whole lot about him, but he spent a ton of money in that congressional primary in 92 and didn't win. Mm-hmm. And part of it is when you have a candidate like John James, there is a real message there that resonates. And I think in this environment, John is doing very well. Mm-hmm. And I think John's fundraising, he was on Fox News twice nationally. That enabled them to, I think they said they've raised 50, money from 50 states. And I think you look in his campaign finance report, he's got impressive financial support from that, that people are raising money. I think John is doing a very good job, and I think he's raising a good amount of money. And with a message like his, he can win.
Mm-hmm. So how do you think John gets to, the name ID? You're talking about, once people know about John, they'll like his story. But how do you think he'll do with name ID, considering he is in a primary with a Supreme Court justice, someone who's been on a statewide ballot, and then also potentially Fred Upton, who also has some name ID?
I think the proof is in this poll. He's barely spent $100,000, and he's already beating both of those candidates who has, they have track records for decades. But John's story is so powerful that, I think you guys didn't test his name ID, but just the fact he's beating him on the ballot test shows you that his name ID's been, there's been a massive increase in support of him.
Is John the kind of candidate that we're going to see draw in a lot of national interest and a lot of national support if this starts to roll?
I think absolutely. I think people nationally are getting excited about him. I've talked to quite a few people who've seen his Fox News interviews, and there is a lot of interest that's perking in John around the country.
Do you consider him kind of an example of sort of the Trump effect of somebody being an outsider, not necessarily on issues, et cetera, just the idea of an outsider, a fresh face? Is that really kind of what he's cashing in on here?
Absolutely. I mean, it's absolutely who he is. I mean, the fact that he has such an impressive background, being from West Point, being in Iraq, serving in Iraq, coming back, running a business, having that kind of experiences, but also the fact that he's never been a politician before and that he's running against Debbie Stabenow, someone who's been in office for, in some way or form, 42 years. He's running against sort of the entire system, and I think it's doing very well.
One thing I also want to talk to you about, Stu, that we've talked about on this podcast before with you. On Friday, the lieutenant governor announced that he is kind of disengaging from the Clean Michigan government initiative, the part-time legislature proposal that he kicked off in June, handing it off to Tom McMillan. What do you think that signals? What do you think it means?
I think I've been pretty clear. I think the guys, the clown, as the Cali clown car continues to crash through 2017. To me, from everything I've seen and heard, they don't have at least half the signatures, but I hear the number could be even lower than that. I think it shows that he knows it's not going to get on the ballot. He had to separate himself, and he's doing it like this. And, I've heard from donors who are annoyed with, putting it in an organization where they gave Dave Ajamal a platform. They did not put that money into that organization at the time for it to be run this way, but we'll see what happens. Again, I've said from the beginning, this isn't about opposition to a part-time legislature. This is about opposition to the way they're running this. I mean, it's very clear they put no thought into it when the language failed. And, no one has done more to sabotage the part-time legislature initiative than Brian Kelly himself.
Let's say Kelly does run. Can you recover from the year he's had? I mean, are the people that he's trying to get support from, are they remember or care that he was leading this part-time legislature drive and that it restarted once and then he disengaged? I mean, can he put this all behind him?
I think the fact that he spent so much resources on this and he hasn't raised an inch in the polling, he's been 14% in this. He hasn't gone beyond 14%. And I think he's taken everything he's tried to run, he's done very poorly. And I think he has some real structural issues in this primary. Number one being the president's endorsed another candidate, and he abandoned the president during the presidential election last year. That is a very powerful issue in a Republican primary. I mean, you could see by all the pollings, Donald Trump has not lost any room with Republican primary voters, and they are very adamant about people who walked away from him.
And now we do have to caveat that and mention again that you are working for the Super PAC.
Yes.
But With that caveat, I do want to ask you: is there a big name Republican endorsement that Kelly can get that has not been gotten yet?
You know, I'm sure he's going to push around his support from Governor Snyder. Governor Snyder's still well liked by Republican voters, but you know, in terms of anyone else, I can't think of someone that's on par with the president. You know, in this kind of dynamic, you want President Trump's support, and I can't think of anybody who sort of matches that in this. And if you look at, you know, Bill Schuette's got Candace Miller, he got Congressman Paul Mitchell, I think was announced this morning. I saw John Husting said something, you know, Brooke Patterson. These are powerful endorsements, not, you know, with the donor community. You know, when they see some this kind of support level, you know, rallying around, it's helpful. And I think President Trump just trying to get past that in a Republican primary is very difficult.
Mm-hmm. Jumping again into the Senate side of the things. Everybody was all over John McCain for being the holdout vote on the repeal or whatever you want to call it on the Obamacare thing. But does that kind of thing convert over to Debbie Stabenow? If she had been a yes vote, it would have passed. Is that the kind of thing that can convert over to the Senate race?
Absolutely. I think there's an absolute frustration with Washington not getting anything done. And, you know, people can blame Republicans all they want, but there are, you know, as you said, there were missing votes. There weren't 50 votes, and part of it was Debbie Stabenow hasn't done anything to try to reform and this, you know, Obamacare system that's collapsing on itself. People's premiums are going up massively, and there's this just idea of how do we fix this? And, you know, Democrats are providing no answers. You're seeing it on tax reform. All they're coming out and doing is sort of lying about the current bill that's out there and saying, well, you know, this doesn't give this group a break or this group a break. I mean, yesterday they did a press conference where they had a lobbyist on a panel complaining that they're not going to make enough money. So it's just kind of ridiculous that, you know, that they're not putting any answers. They're going to just try to run as an opposition party to Trump, and I think that's going to not reflect well on them.
I'm going to ask you one final prediction, Stu. I think I know what you're going to say, but who's going to come out on top in the Michigan-Ohio State game?
I got to tell you, I watching that game, I felt bad for the Spartans. That was pretty rough. You know, I hope this year Michigan can do it. Their defense is clearly, you know, in the top echelon of the...
They're playing better the last couple of weeks.
They are. Brandon Peters is taking care of the ball. It's tough. You know, I'm hoping they win, but I know it's a long odds. But, I always remain hopeful. But Ohio State's got a pretty good team. They do.
I'm going to be rooting for Michigan. I hope Michigan plays the spoiler. I would like to see everything scrambled up.
Although that wouldn't affect Michigan State's chances.
Oh, no, not at all. But no, I would still... I like spoilers. I just do. And if they're coming out of the state of Michigan, I think all the better.
Does Michigan State have two losses in the Big Ten?
Yeah.
So they're... I mean, they're likely to win their next two games. It's Rutgers and Maryland.
Yeah, we should be nine.
It doesn't affect... I think Ohio State has basically, for all intents and purposes, clinched the East.
Yeah.
Which I think could be a factor in that game. You're playing when you've already got it.
Right. So they have one loss right now?
Yeah.
And they've got Michigan, and who else do they have?
It's not anybody
substantial. Yeah, they already played Rutgers, so that's out.
There you go. All right, with that, we're going to wrap this up. We want to thank our sponsor, AT&T, the sponsor of this podcast and all of our podcasts.